Bonjour, it's your friends Lauren James and Ed Biggs.
Hello.
Coming at you with new and classic album reviews from LGM Towers.
Mm-hmm.
It's a momentous occasion because we made it into double figures for our podcast. Welcome Hurrah. To episode 10.
Yeah.
Last episode we were playing catch up with the album releases because Live at Leeds disrupted our normal routine. Some of us more than others, Ed. Cough.
Yeah.
But this episode we are up to speed. We're taking a look at the best and biggest new releases from the weeks starting the 5th and the 12th of May, if you really want to be pedantic about it.
That's where we are, basically.
We've got clips from The Horrors, The Black Keys and Lily Allen, and we'll also talk about the epic, in inverted commas, new album by Swans.
Epic without inverted commas.
With inverted commas. And if we have time, Foxes and the collaboration effort between Brian Eno and Carl Hyde. In the album anniversary section, we'll be playing clips from the Beastie Boys' fourth album, Ill Communication, which was released 20 years ago. Or it will be on May the 24th,
yeah.
As well as the Street's second album, A Grand Don't Come For Free, which turns 10 on the 18th of May.
Which is in the past as we're recording it, but yeah.
So it is. You can also visit our website, laserguidedmelodies.co.uk, for more album reviews, including Tune Yards, Gruff Reese from Super Furry Animals, if you didn't know, Licky Lee, Little Dragon, Blondie, Chromeo, Michael Jackson, and an incredible debut from New York noise punk duo Yvette.
Mm-hmm. There's only one little bit of news snippet. I think that's Metallica headlining Glastonbury. What do you reckon to
that's
that?
That's probably the biggest music news to come out of the past fortnight. Indeed, Metallica, a.k.a. James Hetfield, Lars Ulrich and co. are headlining Glastonbury, which is it's interesting news because in terms of album sales and fans, they're definitely worthy of headlining a festival as big as Glastonbury. But you know, it's already sold out. All the fans who are going will be looking forward to the synth pop, the folk, the acoustic music, maybe a bit of light stadium rock, but nothing like Metallica. So it'll be interesting to see whether they get the reception that they're used to at the rock festivals from the Glastonbury crowd.
Well, yeah, it's a really bold move from the organisers, certainly, and it's a bold move from Metallica to choose to accept it, because it's going to be the first time in God knows how long that they'll be playing sort of outside their comfort zone.
Yeah.
And like not preaching to the converted. And what other festival could you get where you have Beyonce one year and Metallica the next?
Exactly.
Yeah, good luck to them. I think the crowd will probably really enjoy it, because I think a lot of people have this idea of what Metallica are like, and actually they're not
sort
of that loud. They do have a bit more in common with classic rock than people think.
They're not
speed metal like they were right at the start of their career.
In terms of the definition of metal today, they're quite...
Well, you're the metal expert.
They're quite, you know, the party music, really. But, let's just say we'll be watching with intent.
Intent? Intent to watch.
Intent to watch.
That'd be good. Anyway, straight on to the new albums. We don't really have that many sort of notable singles this week.
Okay. Well, The Horrors have returned with their fourth record, Luminous, which currently sits at number 6 in the albums chart. We quite enjoyed this record and... Mm-hmm. We'll tell you why on the other side of this clip that we've picked, which is called So Now You Know. So there you have it. So Now You Know by The Horrors.
Nice. Nice segue. I like it.
I thought that... thought it was good.
I thought it was good.
It was good.
That's primary school book review there.
I like this book.
Yeah. I took the liberty of reviewing this. So, short recap on The Horrors for anybody who doesn't know who they are. They were one of the last sort of post-Libertines British guitar bands to emerge in the middle of the noughties. They used to play sort of a fun but ultimately quite unengaging line in goth/garage pop. And they were dismissed pretty much universally as a flash in the pan sort of band of Hoxton chancers. but then they went away to Berlin in 2009 and came back with an absolutely extraordinary second album called Primary Colours, which sort of kept that gloomy vision from their first album, but reached out into space rock and drone rock and kraut rock, you know, Can, Noi, Spaceman 3, early Kraftwerk. And they were quite sort of an untapped source of influences back then. And I reckon that was the last great album of the noughties. Then we had Skying in 2011, which transformed that sound from monochrome to multicolour. It was like a really effective companion piece to Primary Colours, I thought. They're kind of bound up with each other. They have the same sort of landscapes, the same kind of ambition, but one's just a bit more sort of positive than the other. You know what I mean? It wasn't quite as sort of, you know, sepia-toned. They've always been experts at channeling their influences, wearing them proudly, but they really take artistic ownership of them. So now we have a fourth album called Luminous, and it sticks with the familiar sort of those billowing guitar sounds that you could hear in that. But they seem to take up every available space, but they move the rhythms a bit more towards the dance floor. I mean, in that song you heard the keyboard, the tune sort of bubbling away to itself in the shimmering background and sort of fading in and out of the main rhythm. Yeah, so it's a bit more dance floor friendly. The opening track had one of those sort of mammoth Stone Roses breaking into heaven kind of guitar intros where it's just building up forever and ever and ever. You've got the psychedelia on I See You, the Hendrix guitar shapes on Mine and Yours. It's basically like Happy Mondays if they were goths. as such, I think it's the most successful Horrors album to date. A lot of critics have been a bit less enthusiastic in their praise, but I completely disagree. I think it's easily as good as Primary Colours and Sky.
Well, I can see why people have been reluctant to sing its praises straight away, because it doesn't have as many hooks as in some of their earlier work. So there's...
I'd say the exact opposite, to be honest. I think this was a lot more friendly.
Previous albums for me were just a series of hooks on different songs surrounded by, well, in the latter three albums, or shall I say the middle two, electronic, slightly psychedelic music that was all over the place. And now on the fourth album they've tethered that and they found a direction for it, but in the same way it's become a lot more subtle.
Yeah, I agree with that. It's sold quite well. I think that's their highest chart position to date. Clearly they're getting bigger, in my view, better. I think it's one of the albums of the year. I gave it 9 out of 10. We've given a lot of 9s this year so far, but it's been a very good year for music. Next up, we've got... What do we have?
Lily Allen's Jesus.
Ah.
It came in straight at number 1 in the albums chart last weekend before Michael Jackson came along.
Yeah.
And it's her first record since her sort of retirement / going away to have some babies a few years ago. Here is a clip of the opening title track, and then Ed will tell you what he thinks of it.
My kids watch me when I get in the ring. I'll take the hits, roll with the punches. I'll get back up, it's not as if I've never done this. But then again, the game is changing. Can't just come back, jump on the mic and do the same thing. There goes the bell, I know that sound. I guess it's time for me to go another round. Now wish me luck, I'm gonna need it. I'll see you.
That was Jesus by Lily Allen from Jesus.
So, Lily Allen, a Marmite pop star, if ever there was one. You either you love her or you loathe her.
Can I be in the middle on that one?
Really?
Yeah.
I'm probably the first person to take a neutral opinion on Lily Allen ever.
I'm not a fan of her new image, her new direction, but I liked her old stuff.
But she has a polarising effect on many people. So you think the worst thing that she could possibly do with her third album is do something that nobody could have an opinion on. You know, play it really safe and straight down the middle. Jesus has been expertly marketed. I might say marketed. Marketed.
Marketated.
Yes, with three taster singles leading up to its release last week. Something that I suspect is now done for quite a lot of records now to make them feel kind of familiar to you by the time you've listened to it for the first time. you had the soppy cartoon animal soundtrack and cover of Somewhere Only We Know back at Christmas time. Then you had Hard Out Here, which genuinely was interesting. It was slightly overproduced. And then you had the bubblegum pop of Air Balloon, which we played a few weeks ago on this show. I think it's just like her other two records.
I know it's done in a very ironic, satirical kind of way, but her, you know, using the name Jesus because it's like Kanye's Yeezus.
Yeah.
I know it's satirical, but it feels laboured and it kind of feels like somehow she's piggybacking on other people's fame and ideas by, you know, because Kanye West is everywhere at the moment.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, his music, his personal life, and by tapping into that, she gives herself access to a market that she's been out of for a few years. So it's canny, but a bit see-through.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you about the title. It is very sort of on the nose and is a transparent effort to make herself, yeah, you know, seem relevant. But she is relevant. I think she's never sort of not relevant.
I know, but it does her out of her own praise, really, yeah, because by appearing as if she's under the shadow of another artist by using a pastiche of their name.
Not under, she's equating herself.
No, well, it's harder for her work to be seen in its own light rather than just snatching at pop culture references.
No, I agree. I mean, she was setting herself up for a fall with this, but she's just about avoided the obvious pit trap. I mean, she's stuck with the same producer as her last album, It's Not Me, It's You, a guy called Greg Kirsten. And a host of others come along to sort of lend a hand. And they produce it really impeccably and do the job of updating her sound for the tens. But they're careful not to sort of detract from Lily Allen and her words, which are always the main attraction on this.
Mm.
There's no point in a Lily Allen album if she's not sort of, you know, if she's not got her claws out having a swipe at somebody. Or, you know, you might think she's all sound bites, but She's always retained the interest just about enough. And this album still has the same sort of flaws that other Lily Allen records have had. There's a song called Our Time, which I believe is going to be the next single. Incredibly badly judged. Falls lazily into cliches about how we do and getting our drink on. These phrases that are really time specific and they just don't quite hit the ear correctly. And there's a song on it called As Long As I Got You, which is really sappy and it's about her husband and all that. But it is balanced out by a lot of interesting songs like Hard Out Here. It adds up to a solid, if somewhat predictable effort, but only predictable to the extent that its structure is as flawed as anything she's done before. It's pretty good. Gave it 6.
Solid.
Mm.
The Black Keys up next with their 8th album, Turn Blue, out this week. They are hoping for their first ever UK number one. It's already been decided, but we'll leave it open-ended until after the break. Here's a clip of the opening track, Weight of Love. I gotta think those days are coming to get you. Now nobody wanna protect you. They only wanna forget you. Was Weight of Love from the Black Keys' Turn Blue, which was out this week and unfortunately did not swipe UK number one thanks to Michael Jackson and Escape back from the grave to snatch number one.
Interestingly, I thought one of the Black Keys actually had a real pop at Michael Jackson midweek, saying it was I think to paraphrase, it's something that's so bad they had to wait until 3 years after he died to go anywhere near it. Well, sounds a bit like, you know, sour grapes
though,
to me.
You'd be bitter.
Yeah, but yeah, this album would have made number one in any normal week, basically. Anyway, so the Black Keys, 12-year career, and they've seemed to have risen to the status of everybody's favourite garage blues rock throwback band, haven't they?
Mm.
They've operated for a long time as a cult concern, but when they started hooking up with Danger Mouse, as a producer whose real name's Brian Burton, who was responsible for things like Gnarls Barkley and Demon Days by Gorillaz, when they hooked up with him in 2010 with an album called Brothers, that finally seemed to kind of to break the door down into the mainstream. the album they released straight after that called El Camino was kind of a triumphant victory lap of an album. It was tremendous fun. Now, 2014, after their longest break that they've ever taken, they've decided to stick with the same formula. You know, if it's not broke, don't fix it. So, back with Brian Burton, keeping things fairly safe, you'd think. But Turn Blue actually pushes the boat out a bit more with the kind of songs that Black Keys are trying to make here. That opening track did have a very kind of, it had an instantly familiar Pink Floyd feel to it, something that Matthew, who reviewed it, pointed out as well. It sounds a bit like Wish You Were Here, that kind of lilting opening guitar intro. I've always suspected that the Black Keys' popularity is largely explicable down to the fact that displaced White Stripes fans are pining for that stripped back garage rock, and the Black Keys are now sort of filling a gap in the market.
I feel
that
like
might be a cynical view, but I've never really been tempted to give a Black Keys album more than 7 out of 10.
For me, they're occupying the space Kings of Leon filled around 2008.
Yeah, well, Kings of Leon now think that they're U2, don't they?
Yeah. It's another story.
Yeah. Anyway, I enjoyed the album. I enjoyed it as much as any Black Keys album I've ever listened to. It was good. Matt really enjoyed it. Awarded it 8 out of 10. Yeah, really good. Bravo, guys. I look forward to seeing them at Latitude.
Finally,
yeah.
This week saw the release of To Be Kind, the 13th record by Swans. Will it be a lucky one? It's a 2-hour-long double album. It's pretty hefty. And so we decided we didn't think it would be fair to play just 30 seconds of any song, as it would be rather unrepresentative of the album.
Yeah.
If you're into the Swans, it'd
be utterly pointless
go
to try
find
and do
it. If you haven't heard them before, give it a try.
It's an absolute beast of an album, this one.
I would say it's quite, the word aural assault is probably quite fair.
Yeah.
But then again, I am not as familiar with their back catalogue as you are. So for me,
right, well, can I do a quick potted history in that case for everyone else?
I saw it through the lens of 2014 rather than their entire discography.
Right, so Swans, a very fascinating group of whom, until fairly recently, I was entirely unaware of. I'm not quite sure how that was possible, because the first time I ever heard them, I thought, how have I not heard of them before? They're everything that I like about music. So basically, potted history of Swans. Formed in 1982 by a frontman called, I think his name's Michael Gira. I think that's how you pronounce it. They played incredibly noisy but sort of brutally economical variation of krautrock, which was referred to as no wave, that went on to influence groups like Nine Inch Nails earlier in the early 90s. If you can track down some of those early albums, they're not widely available, but they're definitely worth it, just as this is music with like every melodic element stripped out of it and sort of boiled down to its absolute bare bones. It's extraordinary. Over 10 albums in their original incarnation, they kind of waxed and waned. They fluffed their chance at a major label deal in the early 90s with a disappointing album, before the splitting up on something of a high with a double album in 1996 called Soundtracks for the Blind. That album kind of provided the template for the reformed Swans in 2010. This is, like Lauren just said, this is their 13th album and their third as a reformed group, and it is absolutely breathtaking. 2 hours long, it makes no sense to play anything, any segment of it to you. There was an album in 2012 called The Seer, which was also about 2 hours long and 10 tracks long, which is, again, extraordinary. And I've not been so struck by a record's power in a very long time. I mean, what element of it did you not like, Lauren?
I wouldn't say I not liked it. That wouldn't be a fair assumption to make at this stage, but I'm afraid to say I heard it through the ears of my mum, so to me it sounded shouty, you know. the lack of melody was irritating, and it was just felt like this monstrous noise that I'm sure if I listened to a few more times I'd be able to pick out something to enjoy from it, but on a first listen it's not very friendly. Must be said.
It is an acquired taste. It took me a couple of listens to get into it properly. I mean, there's one song on it that's 34 minutes long. I mean, there are albums that are shorter than that. There's only one song on it that's even remotely that you could play on radio about 5 minutes long. It's a masterclass in arrangement. The songs, they take their time to breathe in and out. They move like pieces of avant-garde classical music. You know, they have movements. They sort of expand, they contract, and he feels like he's conducting an orchestra, basically. Yeah, but it's quite unlike anything else you're going to hear this year. I'm not sure I've sold this particularly well to you, but it's currently sitting inside the UK top 40. It just goes to show public demand for Swans is at an all-time high. They're playing several free festivals later on in the year. And yeah, it's a twin piece with the Seer, similarly constructed, but this is kind of a lighter album than Seer, if that's at all possible, if you can conceive of anything darker than that. So we awarded Swans 9 out of 10. I know that's two nines in 1 week, but you know, when they're there, I think you've got to give them. And so there's also an exceptional record by Yvette out there that we also awarded 9 to. I strongly recommend you check out. And that's all on our website. So, album anniversaries time, Lauren.
Yep, time for the anniversaries.
Yep. Get ready to feel old,
the
corner.
The 18th of May, The Street's second album, A Grand Don't Come For Free, turned 10. You're about to listen to clips of two of its tracks, Blinded by the Lights, and its UK number one single, Dry Your Eyes.
I hate coming to the entrance just to get bars on my phone. You have no new messages, so why haven't they phoned? Men, you write message, so where are you and Simone? Send message, Dan's number, where have they gone? And I'm thinking,
lights are blinding my eyes.
Why's the message pending? Where the fuck are you? And I'm thinking,
people pushing by and walking off into the night.
In one single moment your whole life can turn round. I stand there for a minute staring straight into the ground, looking to the left slightly then looking back down. World feels like it's caved in, proper sorry frown. Please let me show you where we could only just be for us. I can change and I can grow or we could adjust. The wicked thing about us is we always have trust. We can even have an open relationship if you must. I look at her, she stares almost straight back at me, but her eyes glaze over like she's looking straight through me.
You just heard Blinded by the Lights and Dry Your Eyes from The Street's A Grand Don't Come For Free.
Yeah, I can scarcely believe that this album is 10 years old. I can remember buying it when it came out and still at school. So yeah, Grand Don't Come Free, it scooped the commercial rewards where its predecessor original pirate material kind of won over the critics. It tells the story of our hero, Mike Skinner, meeting a girl called Simone. The relationship fizzles out, and then she cheats on him with his best mate, who's going to remain nameless. And then finally there's a teary breakup with the song you just heard, Dry Your Eyes, a song that surprisingly reached number one in the singles chart. It was a great coup for kind of for good music back in 2004, where there was a lot of pap about that year. And of course that song soundtracked England bowing out of yet another major football tournament on penalties. Yeah, and all of this plot happens in the context of a missing £1,000, Skinner trying to win it back on gambling, going clubbing like on Blinded by the Lights, and then going on holiday, which is the lead single, Fit But You Know It, soundtracked. So this isn't a concept album. It is more of a musical in its structure.
It's a chronicling.
Yeah, but what other album is there where there's a plot spoiler? You have to beware of like spoiling like who is cheating on Mike Skinner with.
It reads like a book.
Yeah. The time span over which it happens isn't disclosed. I reckon it's probably about 6 months though.
Very colourful graphic novel.
Yeah.
Filled with all sorts of detail that you wouldn't get in, say, American rap music.
Yeah, you know, yeah, I agree with that.
About how his phone doesn't work in certain rooms of his house unless it's the kitchen.
Yeah, you can't imagine Jay-Z doing that, can you? I mean, you know, okay, American hip-hop is traditionally quite high culture. This is very sort of low-end kind of thing. But this is where Skinner's genius really lies, I think. It's the ability to kind of collapse those kind of minutiae, the mundane, in with kind of like the really significant. I mean, on Dry Your Eyes, I think he's such a relatable character. He's, you know, your typical, your British male who can't quite sort of sum up how he feels. he's begging his girlfriend to come back to him. And that's what makes it such a human album, I think.
Yeah, and when he says his girlfriend, that's the girl looks rough in her work clothes.
In the fourth single, Could Well Be In, yeah. Yeah, the music itself is a lot more polished and can get a bit headachy at times. There were a few of songs where he gets his mates to rap on them that doesn't work quite so well. But it is rougher, it's more polished, sorry, than its predecessor, which was made in Skinner's bedroom. Here he's got access to a full studio and it shows a bit more. It's just a little bit more professionally done. Mm. Yeah, the album scored 4 top 40 UK singles, and it made Mike Skinner a tabloid superstar, basically. And he was never quite the same after it. The following album, which was called The Hardest Way to Make an Easy Living, it was very cocaine induced. It is the sound of somebody battling with an addiction. It's very hollow eyed and quite dead in Twitch. Some ways, yeah. And then he made 2 more albums before retiring the streets in 2011 on a high at Glastonbury. But yeah, this is one half of his golden era. It's a national treasure, this album. It's everything that British hip-hop should be, and it had a delayed effect on British hip-hop because it did spawn the likes of Lady Sovereign and Just Jack and Skinny Man. In the immediate aftermath, I was like, oh my God, what has he done? But now there are people like Kano and Giggs out there who do actually seem to have like taken on the lessons. So he has had a delayed beneficial effect on UK rap.
The Beastie Boys, their 4th record, Ill Communication. Here's a clip of its colossal single, Sabotage.
So you're just listening to Sabotage there by Beastie Boys from their 4th album, Ill Communication, which is going to turn 20 years old on May the 24th. We were just listening to that before we recorded this. What did you think?
Yeah, really great album. I can't believe how old it is, really, because the songs, whilst they're not really like anything that's produced nowadays, are still as effective, have retained that certain quality that made them attractive back in the day. Now, you know.
Yeah.
That's the best way I can articulate it.
It's a party record, I think, ultimately. There's on some of them, you can still hear that kind of like speed metal thrash sound.
Definitely the rhythms are there, and he's singing.
Because Beastie Boys used to be kind of like they used to resemble Black Flag and Minor Threat right at the start of their career, and so they do keep some of that sensibilities, but there's a lot of sort of funk and Latin rhythms in there as well. It is a bewilderingly varied album. It put their career and their reputation back on track after sort of the slight wobble that Check Your Head represented in 1992. It re-energised people's attitudes towards them. It made them re-engage with their public, I think, because Paul's Boutique, which their second album in 1989, it didn't sell very well at all. It was a completely unexpected move from a band that previously had done songs like Fight for Your Right to Party and No Sleep Till Brooklyn. People didn't really know what to make of it. So it took another 5 years for the public to kind of the public and the Beasties to kind of re-engage with each other. And Sabotage is the song you just heard. It has this amazing sort of 70s cop spoof video that sort of swept quite a lot of award ceremonies back in 1994. As for the album itself, it relies quite a lot more on old school rhyme schemes and word battles than Paul's Boutique did, and even Licensed to Ill, their first one, which sold tons and tons of albums, made them serious millionaires. But this album also gets the Beastie Boys aesthetic definitely like nailed down. Old school rap, pop, funk rhythms mixed with samples and textures that range from anything from Latin to sort of garage punk. It's one of your ultimate party albums.
Good time to roll.
Yeah, and Paul's Boutique, the second album, I think it's a better record, and that will turn 25 later this year. So we'll come back and talk about that album in a bit more detail, which is, like I said, even better than this. So
great. Yeah. That was a really good tribute. Well, in 2 weeks' time, you'll hear us again when we'll return with episode 11.
Yeah.
Legs 11, hosted by both of us. As usual, we'll be talking about...
Oh, and Matthew will be here as well, apparently.
I won't hold my breath.
Yeah.
Yes. We'll be talking about significant music news and new tracks. We'll also be reviewing new records and some classic albums. The biggest new release is undoubtedly the 6th record by Coldplay called Ghost Stories, which we'll definitely be discussing without saying what...
What?
Conscious Uncle.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I haven't used that in my review yet.
Kind of inevitable though, isn't it?
Yeah.
There are also new releases by Connor Oberst of Bright Eyes, Echo and the Bunnymen, The Roots, Guided by Voices, Hercules and Love Affair, The Pains of Being Pure at Heart, and mystifyingly, Cher Lloyd.
Yeah, Matthew's got that one.
If we're not talking about them next time, they will definitely be reviewed on our website, so make sure you keep your eyes peeled for new reviews.
Yeah. Laserguidedmelodies.co.uk, which you must type into your browser.
We'll also be appraising one of the most popular records of all time, Bruce Springsteen's legendary Born in the USA, which will turn 30 years old on June the 4th. We'll also chat.
It's a shame it's not July the 4th, because that just would be perfect, wouldn't it? Independence Day.
It would be. We'll also be talking about The Killers' debut album, Hot Fuss, which was released 10 years ago on June the 7th.
Wow, that is amazing.
And Nirvana's debut album, Bleach, which was released 25 years ago on the 15th of June. If you've enjoyed somewhat pretentious analysis and occasionally jovial chatter and you would like to join in the conversation, you can join us on Facebook at Laser Guided Melodies and be our friend forever. Find us on Tumblr by searching for the same thing. That's where you can read all our reviews.
Yep.
Or follow us on Twitter, the fastest way to get into contact with us, by searching LG Melodies. At LG Melodies. Ed also has a presence on a site called This Is My Jam, where he talks about other significant records that pass milestones.
Yeah, it's amazing records. You can like pick a song from one of your favourite albums and sort of post it on Facebook with a video and a clip.
Nice.
Yeah.
So do that, go there, read that, and until next time, goodbye.
Bye.